This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Right, so let's start with the Mesilas Yesharim. We're still in the beginning of chapter 1, Perek Aleph. We've done only the first few lines of it. And now we'll move into the next piece. What's really important to appreciate with the Mesilas Yesharim as we move through it, Ivan Horovitz mentioned last week, and you said, Ivan, it's a coaching manual. Ivan's wife is an outstanding coach, and he was saying just from hearing from her technology and methodology what the process of coaching is, this is a coaching manual, and I thought about it a lot over the last week. And the Mesilas Yesharim is, there are many brilliant things about it, but what's quite unique about it is it's a step-by-step coaching manual to spiritual achievement. It's not a theoretical book about stuff. It's actually a step-by-step coaching manual. So when I started off saying, did anybody do their homework? It depends whether, if you want to treat this as a coaching experience, then it needs work. If you want to just learn a sefer, then okay, we're having a shiur and a sefer, and you'll learn a bit of Mesilas Yesharim, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's very good. But it's not going to transform you. Knowing the whole sefer from cover to cover by heart is not going to make a difference. Just as knowing the whole of Shas doesn't make a whole difference. The difference, people transform themselves when they work on themselves. And it's hard. Working on yourself is really, really hard. Many of you have heard, I'm sure, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter saying that working on yourself, just changing one characteristic is harder than learning the whole of Shas. And I was raised on that statement. I knew it as a little child, my father used to tell us that. And so you kind of know it. But until you actually start working on yourself, you don't know what it means. And those of you who've worked on yourselves physically know what it is to work on, have some sense of what it is to work on yourself. Malcolm, your running experience, what it is to have transformed yourself from where you started to where you are. How much toil and labor and pain and discipline to be able to do that. That's just for physical characteristics. To actually train and transform in the human area and in the spiritual area is much more difficult, and in some ways more painful, because you go to places that aren't really the most comfortable places to want to go to. So what I'm recommending is that you take this opportunity, as we learn through it, as an opportunity to transform yourself, to work on it, and really see it happen. And I think that's the chiddush of the Mesilas Yesharim in understanding Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah's brisa. When Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah said, "Atorah mevi'ah lidei zehiros, zehiros lidei zehiros," he recognized that Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoyah was giving a coaching model. That's a method of transformation. Torah mevi'ah, there's a way to get to zehiros. There's a way to get to zehiros. And it's really, really important. I've mentioned to some of you, I don't think I've mentioned it in the shiur, that the Baal HaCheshbon and HaNefesh, when he discovered Benjamin Franklin's system of self-development, got very excited, because he said the Sifrei Musar haven't done that. The Sifrei Musar described the end product. This is what it is to be a tzaddik. This is what it is to be an Oved Hashem. But they don't actually lay out a process. They kind of take it for granted that people have learned at home how to do that. And they just lay out the milestones, and they lay out the end product. Whereas he gets very excited with Benjamin Franklin's methodology, actually how to do it on a week-to-week basis. He worked that out. Benjamin Franklin was a brilliant person, and a person who took self-development very, very seriously. The whole Franklin Covey method that you can buy in the shops, that was Covey taking Franklin's methodology and commercializing it. And Stephen Covey taking Franklin's methodology and Benjamin Franklin's methodology and commercializing it into the Franklin Covey methodology. But that's the same methodology that the Baal HaCheshbon HaNefesh does. So he takes Benjamin Franklin's methodology and translates it into Hebrew, and that's the Sefer Musar, the Cheshbon HaNefesh, which should be Sron Salantik very excited about. But the truth is the Maaseh Seshorim also is a step-by-step methodology, if we take it that way and we learn it that way. And he bases himself on the Brayse of Rabbi Pinchas Ben-Yoyah, who gave a step-by-step methodology, except that Rabbi Pinchas Ben-Yoyah's steps were just gigantic steps. Most people can't do that. It's all very well to do step-by-step, but if each step is farther, much farther than the pace of a normal human being, then how does it really work? And the Maaseh Seshorim breaks it down and makes it a little bit easier. So what we had last week was the understanding of the idea of Chov and the idea of Eilomah, that each person has a world of his own, and the idea of Chov, that once you've constituted your world and spent some time, here's the work that one could have done from last week, if you'll remember, is constitute your world, who's in your world, and then start focusing very, very carefully and deeply into what you've received from the components of your world, how much you've received, what you've received from the different components, and to feel very deeply the sense of indebtedness. And the deep feeling is what transforms. When you really feel a sense of, it's not a comfortable thing. It's not comfortable to sit and think, my goodness, I owe so much to so many people. What will I ever do? It's not comfortable. But that begins a process of transformation. If you never feel the discomfort of indebtedness, then there's never even, we don't even begin to use it. And of course, the same in our relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There needs to be that sense of understanding of what we've got from him, and therefore the indebtedness that we owe him. And we said at the end of last week that we were going to touch on an idea this week of the merging of pleasure and duty. You'll remember the Maaseh Seshorim said last week, it's really important to clarify what it is, what your obligations are. And he does this in much greater detail further on when he talks about vision and mission and stuff like that. You know, people think that this is some modern invention. And Maaseh Seshorim outlines the methodology clearly. It wasn't just an invention of Michael Porter from the Harvard Business School 40 or 50 years ago. It's something much, much older than that. The idea that when you have that very clearly in front of you, who you are and what your life is, you can test very quickly whether an action is in line or isn't in line. That becomes your moral compass. You can't say halacha is your moral compass, because every time you're about to do something, what are you going to do? Take out Shulchan Aruch and start going through with Shach and Taz and go through with the with all the Meforshim that get you there, and go back into the Sugya of Gemara with Rashi and Tosfos, get into the Rambam and the Rif and the Rosh before you decide whether you can do it. You can't do that. So you've got to have a very quick picture of what is important in your life, so that you can instantly check and say, is this taking me closer or moving me further apart? And the Maaseh Seshorim will give us some of that methodology, and he begins with it now. And he says, V'hinei ma shehorunu chachameinu zal, what our chachomim have taught us, and here's the amazing thing. Man has been created but for one thing. There's only one purpose of for the creation of man, one objective for man's creation. What would that be? What are we created to do? What's our job here? What's our duty here? When Hashem created us, what did he want from us? Lehis'aneg. I'm going to pause after that word, although the phrase is not complete. Lehis'aneg, to have pleasure. So all those philosophers that argue that pleasure, that the seeking of pleasure is the greatest driver of human behavior, you know what? They're right. We were created as pleasure seekers. That's what we were created for. Lo nivro elo lehis'aneg. We are wired that way. We're structured that way. No wonder we've got a Yetzirah. We're built to seek pleasure. But we're given the ability to discern levels of pleasure. And God's assumption is that if we really discern levels of pleasure properly, we'll pursue the pleasures that are most pleasurable. And the pleasure for which we were created ultimately is lis'anig al Hashem, to find pleasure in Hashem, v'lehanois miziv shchinose, and to find joy from the aura of his Shekhinah. Shezehu ha-ta'anug ha-amiti v'ha'idun ha-godol mikol ha-idunim she'yecholim nehimotze. For this is the true pleasure and the greatest indulgence of all the indulgences that could possibly be found. He doesn't even say all the indulgences in the world. He doesn't even say all the indulgences that exist. He says all the indulgences that could possibly exist. Because man is created to experience the ultimate pleasure. And the ultimate pleasure is the pleasure of attachment to Hashem. Umakom ha'idun hazeh, we'll read to the end of this paragraph and then analyze it a bit more deeply. Umakom ha'idun hazeh, and the place of that indulgence and pleasure, be'emesu ha'ilom habo, that's really the world to come. Ki hu ha'nivro b'hachono ha'mitztareches ledover hazeh, because that is what has been created specifically for that. Ilom habo is a pleasure temple. It's just a place of joy and pleasure, where we're able to enjoy the ultimate of all pleasures without any distraction at all. That's what Olam Haba is. That's Olam Haba. Now, there are a few things that we've got to look at over here. The first is, he says, Umokom ha'idun hazeh be'emes u'olam haba, the place of this true indulgence, be'emes, the truth of this indulgence, is Olam Haba. Which doesn't mean that you can't experience it in Olam Hazeh. It's not the endless, it's not the true thing. You don't get the full experience in Olam Hazeh. But to get some of it, we can. Of course we can. So the real place, the ultimate place of unadulterated joy of closeness with Hashem is Olam Haba. But in Olam Hazeh, we can get it as well. And we'll get a little bit further into that. Now here is where we fall short very often in the way we teach Torah. Because we kind of accept this. I suppose most of you know this, and if I would have asked you the question, you would have said it, either because you've learned the Masilas Yeshorim before, or because you've heard the idea. But tell me seriously, how many of you believe it? You believe it because the Masilas Yeshorim says it, Chazal say it, we've got Emunas Chachomim, but I'm not talking about that kind of belief. I'm talking about not an intellectual belief, where you believe it because, you know, there are two types of belief. There's a mental belief where you believe something, you're told something and you believe it, but there's a belief where you know it from experience. You've actually experienced it. To say that there is no pleasure like the pleasure of experiencing God and finding joy in the aura of His presence. There is no pleasure like that. How many of us really believe that? Truth is, we don't, because we haven't experienced it. We believe that he says it. We believe that Chazal say it. And if they say it, it must be true. But in terms of experience, we've experienced a lot of joys. We've experienced a lot of pleasures. Does the pleasure of being in touch with God rank with those pleasures? And when I say we fall short, is because really one of the ways we need to teach this is really to say to people, okay, try it out. If it's right, try it out. And test it. Because you can't teach pleasure without giving people a taste of it. Imagine if you had never had the pleasure of a glass of outstanding wine, as most people who only drink kosher wine actually haven't had that pleasure of truly outstanding wine. Now it's getting a little bit easier. But let's say, so we who haven't had an experience, can somebody really explain to us what that pleasure is? It's difficult. Somebody who's never heard music. Can somebody explain to them what the pleasure of great music is for one who really understands it? Very difficult to explain. So how can you explain pleasures when there hasn't been the experience of it? And how often do you find that in the teaching of Torah, we're teaching people how to access the pleasure? I don't hear that often. We talk about the fact it is a pleasurable thing. You need to know, accept, it is pleasurable. Okay, I get it. But that's not what I'm talking about. If that's what it is, if we really believe that, why aren't we experimenting with it? Why aren't we trying out? It would be interesting. I don't think it isn't right. What I'm going to say is not 100%. I was going to say that in my experience as a rabbi, I don't think I've ever been asked a shaila like that. How do I get pleasure from tefillah? How do I get pleasure from tefillin? How do I get pleasure from Shabbos, from kashrus? How do I access the pleasure? So it's, I can't say that I've never been asked that question, but very, very seldom. How do you do it? What are you meant to do? What happens if you don't? All those questions you find out there. What are the halakha? But how do I access the pleasure? What's the methodology of accessing the pleasure? Because you know what? If we learn how to access the pleasure, it becomes much easier to do. And that doesn't mean that it's pleasure all the way. Just as if you ask those people who do run, you know, what on earth do you do it for? What makes you do it? And you try running a little bit and it's terrible. And you come back convinced that anybody who does this is crazy. And they'll tell you they feel wonderful afterwards. It's an incredible feeling. They're on a high. So what is it that drives them? If they never felt the pleasure, would they do it? They're willing to go through the pain because they know the pleasure that comes as a result of that pain. Now we could say, well, you can't experience the pleasure until Olam Haba. But that's not accurate. That's not what he's saying. He says, the true, unadulterated pleasure, that we can't experience in this world. But we can get a sense of it when we connect. And we need to talk about that a little bit as to how one goes about actually accessing that. The
if I may, there's a statement that presupposes everybody's identical. But it's not so. Everybody derives pleasure from different things. I mean, you want to make your greatest pleasure could be making 1 billion pounds. And the next day you achieve, you have absolutely sublime pleasure from making another 100,000 pounds, they add to your billion. And knowing full well that you'll never make use of it in your entire lifetime, nor your family. But you get pleasure from that.
So that is true.
People get pleasure from eating. So all they want to do is eat. Running, I mean, it's fine. So but this statement just equates everybody.
Is generic. This statement is generic, that everybody.
In one direction only.
Everybody's ultimate is not, out of all the different joys that are specific to different people, such as the ones you've described, none equate to the joy you feel when your soul connects with God. What about the joy you feel when your soul connects with another human being's soul? Doesn't happen very often. Sometimes it happens on a little bit. You just feel there's a soul connection. You hear people sometimes talking about a soul connection. But sometimes you feel a real deep soul connection. What does that feel like? So can you imagine what happens when our soul connects to the Ribbono Shel Olam? There's a... The source of real pleasure seeking is not the body. The real source, the driver of pleasure seeking is the neshama. The neshama is designed to seek pleasure. But it's because we don't know how to access it, or because we're not willing to invest the effort into accessing that pleasure, we satisfy our egos with other forms of pleasure that are also pleasurable. But it doesn't really satisfy. And that's why Oyev Kesef Lo Yispa Kesef. That's one. If one's pleasure world is money, you'll never get enough of it because physical pleasure is not satisfying. Physical pleasure is pleasurable in the moment, but it doesn't satisfy. You never have a physical pleasure and say, that was wonderful. Had enough? Doesn't happen. That was wonderful. Tomorrow I want some more. That's Oyev Kesef Lo Yispa Kesef. And that comes from the neshama. Because the soul by its nature doesn't get satisfied. The soul by its nature is infinite. And only when the infinite attaches to the infinite, and there's a flow of pleasure from infinite to infinite, does the soul really find its fulfillment. And most of us spend most of our lives pursuing substitutes for what we really want and we really need. And we don't have time tonight to go into the depths of how to access it, and some of you, I'm sure, are doing it and have done it already. But we need to talk about some of the things that are important. And we get a sense of it from the finer pleasures in life. if we take, in fact, the way a wine expert will guide you as to how to access the pleasure of wine drinking, what are some of the principles? If you want to really enjoy a glass of wine, what do they tell you to do? Well, the first thing is you can't drive up to a McDonald's and order a glass of wine and kind of swallow it and get back into your car and drive on. So, well, that would, you know, Coke is better. Can't do it at a fast food outlet. Where do you have a glass of wine if you want to enjoy it? You have the right ambience. You've got to have the right atmosphere. You can't just have it. The place in which you have it has to be right. The environment in which you have it has to be right. The time in which you have it has to be right. And you have to be settled. You have to slow down. It's not something you're going to enjoy if you're in movement, if you're in a hurry. You have to be able to slow down. So just go through the process. You want to enjoy a glass of wine. So you'll set the ambience right. You'll dim the lights. You'll take out the wine. You'll turn on the music. You'll take out the bottle. You'll read the label. You'll probably look up if you're really getting passionate about it. You'll do some research. Where does it come from? Where is the vineyard? What exactly is the nature of this particular cultivar? And you'll try and get a little bit more knowledge and information. And finally, you'll let the wine breathe a little bit. You'll pour the wine. Then what do they tell you you need to do? You look at it. Look at it. Look at the colors. Compare it to other colors. Smell it. Get the fragrance of the wine, the aromas of the wine. And then very slowly, with a lot of attention, you take it into your mouth. You hold it there. And you focus all of your attention onto the complexity of tastes that you're holding in your mouth. And you swallow it. And then you wait. And you feel the aftertaste. And you sit with it a while. And you do it again. And so you start getting into it. Now, why should a mitzvah be any different? And how do we do our mitzvahs? We rush in, we do them, we rush out, we check them off the list. There's no way that can be enjoyable. Just take the simple things. Take how you enjoy music, how you enjoy poetry, how you enjoy literature, how you enjoy good food, how you enjoy a sport. All of them require time, focus, application, appreciation. That's what it requires. It requires indulgence. Idun, I've specifically translated idun that way. Idun is not just pleasure. Idun is an indulgent pleasure. You've got to indulge in a mitzvah to be able to taste it. To take the time out and indulge in a mitzvah. So you'll say to me, but then when's the time for anything else? If you're going to do your mitzvahs like that, when are you going to... And I think that's quite right. Working on oneself, an avodah, a spiritual practice and a spiritual journey is a full-time job. And everything else you fit in part-time. That's Asei Teros Chokeva. Asei Teros Chokeva isn't just about learning. It doesn't say Asei Limud Teros Chokeva. It's not about learning that has to be your main attention. It's Torah, your Torah life. Has to be keva. That's the fixed part. That's your profession. Your profession is developing yourself. Your profession is training, transformation, self-development. That's our profession. We do it in different channels. We do it in different ways. And even in our work, and even in our business, and even in our relaxation, we're busy doing it at that time because there are many mitzvahs involved in that too. But the level of mindfulness and the level of attention. So the homework for next week is not to do it in everything. That's not going to be possible. But just between now and next week, choose one mitzvah once. Not even talking about every day. Just choose one mitzvah. Take out some time to do a mitzvah. To do a mitzvah as you would have a glass of wine. Indulge yourself in one mitzvah. Any mitzvah you want. But just give it the time. Give it the space. Give it the focus. Make sure you're not going to be distracted when you do that. If a person opens an expensive bottle of wine, they turn off their cell phones before they do that. And they tell their kids to disappear somewhere. They're busy, they're having a glass of wine. This is a special occasion. Make a special occasion out of it. And see if you can access some of the idun. See if you can feel what it's like to connect your soul to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It happens sometimes when you're learning Torah, if you're learning something very beautiful, doesn't even have to be something complex. Sometimes when you're learning something very complex and brilliant, you feel your soul connecting with the Torah and with Hashem. And there's no feeling in the world like that. And sometimes it doesn't have to be something very complex. Just a posuk in the Chumash that you're learning. And you understand it and you get an insight. And all of a sudden you're indulging in the idea of the posuk, as you would indulge in a piece of poetry or a beautiful piece of literature. Sometimes you read a page from an exceptionally well-written book, just one page, and you read it over and over again because it's so beautiful. It can bring you to tears. That's indulgence in an experience. And one has to be able to do that in the mitzvahs as well. This isn't going to work. When you read the Mitzvah Yeshurim, you realize that this needs redirection. You can't carry on living your life as we are, and go through the coaching process that the Mesillas Yeshurim is going to lay out chapter after chapter. It actually requires a redirection of the way we live, particularly in relationship to the mitzvahs we do. And we need to start developing the capability of finding joy and pleasure in the mitzvahs. Deep, deep joy. So that you come out of a mitzvah and you say, wow, there's been nothing in my life has been quite like that. That's how one should come out of a mitzvah. Nothing in my life that has been quite like that. It can be a piece of davening. It can be a piece of. It was interesting. The other day I was in shul on Shabbos morning, and the and Kayla, I think it was in the shul. I think it was even at the Mizrahi shul, and they were singing the Kayla Odin in the Shabbos morning davening, and the tune was very beautiful, and it was just at a very very lovely pace. And I just, probably for the first time ever, allowed myself to indulge in that particular tefillah. Not like rushing on my way to get to Kriya Shema, just totally indulging in the sounds of the words. Do you remember when we learned the Nefesh HaChaim? How the Nefesh HaChaim said in davening, just indulge in the form of the letters, in the sound of the words. It's like the drinking of the wine, Lahavdil. All the different things. Look at it, smell it. Taste it, feel it, read it, understand it. Put it all together. That's how you indulge. So you might choose a tefillah to be the mitzvah that you choose to indulge in. One little piece of tefillah, one paragraph of tefillah. It might be a brocha that you want to make. It might be lighting candles on Friday night. Take half an hour over it. Take an hour over lighting candles. A woman is lighting candles. What's the rush? Your husband's in shul. Shabbos is him, there's nothing to do. Spend an hour lighting the candles. It can be done. You can spend an hour on it and see what it feels like at the end of it. As long as you've got rid of all the distractions before that. It can be kiddush. It can be benching one day. Pick one mitzvah, anything you want, and try and indulge in it. Try and just find pleasure. But give it the space you need and the time you need in order to be able to find pleasure in a mitzvah. So that when we read a piece of Mesillas Yeshurim like this, we believe it. Not just we know it and understand it, but we believe it because we've actually had a taste of it. Just a little taste of it. Because if we haven't even had a taste of it, then this is academic. We're learning it, academic, we accept it, but it's academic. The moment we've had a taste of it, it becomes something that we can build on and we can develop as we move forward in our journey.